welcome to episode 91 of season 2 of the Search with Canada podcast. I am your host, Jack Chambers Ward, and my guest for this week is the master of markup himself, Dave Ojeda. Dave and I are going to be talking all about structured data, schema, and a lot of controversial topics. We talk about FAQ schema, we'll talk about how to, and all the depreciation that's been happening from Google's end, and why we think schema is still hugely relevant in 2023. For my money, Dave is one of the guys to talk about schema and structured data in the industry, so I was really, really excited to pick his brains and ask a lot of questions to Dave all about schema. Before I get to my conversation with Dave, of course, I'd like to say a huge thank you to this podcast sponsor, Systrix. Systrix have sponsored us for the entirety of Season 2, all the way through 2023. Thank you so much for your support, Systrix. And you can go to systrix.com/trends. You can subscribe to the Trendwatch newsletter, and you can get 10 exclusive trends delivered to your inbox every single month. You can get a little preview on systrix.com/trends, but you don't get the full thing. You get the top three, just the top of the newsletter. If you want the full 10, you got to get the newsletter. So let's start off with the least controversial one here. We're going to talk about some not safe for work stuff in about as safe for work as I can keep it. Let's talk about in-post lockers, shall we? And these are these retailers where you can drop things off at a secure location, usually like a literal locker, kind of like you would have in a gym or in a school gymnasium and stuff like that. And it gets rid of a lot of the shipping issues, a lot of the costs around that. When it comes to buying and selling stuff online, you can drop something off at a locker and then it is transported without you having to go to the post office and all this kind of stuff. Lots of retailers here in the UK, like Co-op, the supermarket chain, have partnerships with InPost, so you can pick up your stuff while you're doing your shopping. Rather than having a home delivery, you're out of the house anyway. And especially if you're out of the house a lot, like me and my wife are, we both work, 9 to 5, typical kind of jobs. Means we're not in the house 24/7 when deliveries come. And this is the perfect example of, oh, if I know I'm going to go to Co-op, or if I know I'm going to the city or whatever it is, going to do some shopping later on, there is a location with an InPost locker, have your stuff sent there and you can go and pick it up while you're doing your errands, while you're doing your shopping. It makes total sense to me. And I know my wife does it a fair amount when she's shopping online as well. And yeah, super, super convenient. The next thing I want to talk about is Rule 34. And this is something I've talked about on my other podcast on Sequelizers, which is my movie podcast about bad sequels. Rule 34 is a phrase that is about 20 years old now, funnily enough, captioned Rule 34, there is porn of it, no exceptions. So if you have a subject of anything, Rule 34 suggests there will be pornographic material of that subject. And it has grown in popularity over the last 5 years. I thought this was an old thing. I thought this was an old webcomic thing that people weren't doing these days and really talking about. But apparently Rule 34 is still a thing on the internet, and I feel very old. I thought we'd kind of grown out of that as internet users. Maybe that's just because I'm in my 30s now and I'm feeling old. Let's finish off with a little bit more wholesome stuff. So let's talk about Bugaboo Butterfly, the polar opposite of Rule 34. Bugaboo Butterfly is a stroller that launched last year and it has become the go-to stroller for so many people. Super friendly features. It's super like collapsible. It's got really good designs. It's really easy to clean. It's like really selling itself as the go-to kind of travel stroller for a lot of people. And they have absolutely exploded over the last 18 months since they launched in spring of 2022. There is a big kind of young parents meta that's happening at the moment as well. A lot of people lockdown babies, put it that way, who now have lockdown toddlers, I guess, because it's 2023, and are having strollers and stuff like that. So this is a big, big time for a lot of people. And now people are traveling as well. If you're listening to this on the week that it comes out, I am currently on my honeymoon, so I am traveling as well, but not with any kids. But anyway, yes, Bugaboo Butterfly are a super trendy of the moment kind of brand, and yeah, highlighted there in the Systrix data. Go to systrix.com/trends. You can learn all about Bugaboo Butterfly. You can learn all about Rule 34, and you can learn all about in-post lockers. There'll be a new trend watch by the time you hear this in October. There'll be the new Trendwatch coming out for October, talking about September. So please do go to Systrix.com/trends and subscribe to the newsletter over there. My guest for this week is the master of markup and the sovereign of structured data, the one and only Dave Ojeda. Welcome to the show, sir.
Thank you, Jack. Thank you. You are with me on my walks and my treadmill on a weekly basis, so it's good to be here.
It's very cool to hear that. I very much appreciate that. I know you were recently on the Rankable podcast with Garrett. Shout out to Garrett and the guys at iPool Rank. Fantastic
They're
episode.
Awesome.
And you gave me a shout out on there as well. So I very much appreciate that. I'd return the favor to Garrett and the crew as well.
Sure.
Awesome. So I'm kind of teased that we're going to be talking about a lot of schema, a lot of structured data stuff today. But I know you and I also have a shared love of Dungeons & Dragons. And you dropped a bombshell when we were speaking a few weeks ago that you met Gary Gygax at one of the first Gen Cons. Just casually dropping that in conversation, like it's not a big deal or whatever. Can you please tell me that story? Because I feel like the listeners need to know that.
No, it was, I'm from Chicago. Gen Con was in Milwaukee. It was in Wisconsin. So the key is that we took a bus up there when we were young. We went to this small little conference because we had heard things about it in Chicago at our hobby store. And meeting him was like, for a child at that point, like oh my God, like you created this stuff. And I remember with a ticket I had, he autographed my entry ticket. And I have it somewhere in the basement. It was one of those awe-inspiring moments that you keep with you forever, especially because, like you, Jack, over time I've loved Dungeons & Dragons. So it's been a part of me, so it's very nostalgic to have had that moment.
Yeah, I think that's something when you have that real kind of inspirational moment and you have that, never meet your heroes kind of thing. But when it actually works out and they're cool people, there's nothing quite like it, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I'm sure we could talk about Dungeons & Dragons for another 2 or 3 hours, but
yeah,
since this is the Search with Candor podcast, we should probably talk about some actual relevant SEO and marketing stuff. So I want to kind of kick things off, I guess, with the elephant in the room. We're going to be talking about schema. We're going to be talking about structured data and the recent kind of reduction in visibility of FAQ schema and how-to schema. I mean, you are the man when it comes to schema across the board, pretty much. So what is your kind of thoughts behind the thinking from Google's point of view of this, and how do you think that affects a lot of people's strategies going forward?
Well, I think that, once again, I mean, it was a clearing of the decks. They were taking away because... Number one, it was spam potential.
FAQs, yeah.
FAQs. Rating reviews is the biggest one, but FAQs was a big one. So they wanted to clear the decks. Were they pushed to do it quicker because of SGE? Absolutely. They're like, hey, we want to do this. It's like, and I bet you the higher ups are like, yeah, clear the decks. So now we're given real estate for them to do what they're going to do. As we know with SGE, who knows what the final iteration is going to be, but most likely it's going to use and pull in that type of information, how-to format, FAQ format, listicles, of course, and bring it in there. So, of course, they want to preserve that area as dominance to show that sort of information. So, I mean, it makes sense that they're doing it. I understand why. I will caveat, as we know, Jack, SGE is evolving. I mean, it's evolving weekly in what they're doing, what they're not, and what they're pulling away. So I think that at a certain point, when they fine-tune and tweak it, which could be in another year from now, will there be a potential that rich results, additional rich results, or the return of rich results of FAQ and how-to may happen? I believe so. Will it be in the same format? No. Will it be in some other format that maybe is in slightly reduced but supporting what's happening with SGE? Yes.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think this... It was such a clear path, and I know something Mark and I were talking about. It's like almost like the cookie crumbs leading us through the forest that Google is laying for us, right? It was like, oh, there's reduction in visibility for FAQ schema and how-to schema, and then the kind of updates of SGE. Is it going to have links? Is it not going to have links? You have kind of almost like the PAA style questions in there as well, and I think you're totally right. There's that clear connection between that data and that direction that Google is hanging. Seems to be hanging their hat on SGE and going in that direction. I think it's a pretty clear indication from them that seems to be the future of it. And I know it's something you've talked about before, but I think it's something that's worth like reminding people that because they reduce the visibility in terms of featured snippets and stuff, that's not, rich results are not the only thing that Schema does, right? That is a very small slice of the pie of the structured data thing. So there is still a huge amount of value in having FAQ Schema and having how to on your site, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the thing here is, let's think about schema.org and when it was created. There were no rich results benefits. I mean, that was a carrot and stick that Google provided because, number one, they provide something when they need you to do something so they can use that in the SERPs, which they did. But in the beginning, it was always about schema.org is a vocabulary to define entities and those relationships. And it always has been. You know, let's think about this. Schema.org, some of the top players running schema.org are Googlers. They still are. If you look at what they're having in their discussions, it's Googlers asking questions about, hey, can we add this property type? Can we add this new schema? Because obviously they want that either extension of vocabulary or a refinement of vocabulary. So with that, it's going to be long-term is they've always wanted this and they continue to do it and support it. I think it's a primary thing for them under the, basically under the hood. I think that while rich results have been reduced and maybe even reduced some more, I think that the core that, people are starting to just truly understand and embrace now is that entity relationships are going to be the core moving forward. And we could talk too, again, about, how it potentially affects LLMs if you want as well.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's something is worth bringing up because LLMs so clearly rely on semantics and relationships between entities, right? To understand, and this is something, again, Mark and I had talked about previously, we pulled out an example of, it was like a soccer player to you in the US, Dave, or a football player to me here in the UK. and it was talking about like the teams they had played for and like their scoring record and stuff. And it had pulled through some correct names, but some of them were just straight up wrong. Like the name of the team was incorrect because it had pulled through some other thing that had clearly been linked to it. I think we were testing Bard and Bing AI and that kind of thing and trying to understand how these LLMs understand, celebrities as an entity, essentially. So how much do you think Schema is going to play a factor in that? If we are, looking to optimize for SGE and stuff like that in the future, how much of a player is Schema going to be in that in creating those entities and helping Google to understand them?
Well, I think you kind of answered the question with what you were talking about, which is, if you can give an LLM or, even algorithm, if you can give them structured data versus unstructured, you've basically taken, reduced the overhead of them trying to filter out, understand, and make sense of it and utilize that data. So if all things are considered equal, they'll take structured anytime. I mean, here's the thing, and I've mentioned to people before is, Ryan Levering, who is in the structured data team from Google, and this is going back to a year ago, no LLMs, no ChatGPT, nothing else. He was talking about this is where they were moving towards already. And, two lines that come up that I want to mention that he said specifically was speaking to like future schema markup. He said, I would like to move. And when he says, I would like to, he's one of the drivers. So this is not
making... We are moving to.
I would like to move to where we are adjusting more and more data through structured data specific channels rather than necessarily conveying all of our information on the web page itself, which aligns with what we're talking about, Jack. I mean, another thing he says, so figuring a way to get around the actual visual representation and figure out ways to link the structured data on the web page, but not necessarily embed it on a web page. So I think there's a cleaner way to do data transfer between data providers and Google. So, I mean, they were thinking of this probably even farther than a year ago, as we know, because they always plan ahead. It's like, we want structured data. We want structured information. I mean, you think about this, Jack, is, if they could have all structured data as opposed to unstructured, what would be the reduction in overhead of crawling, of indexing for them? I mean, it would be tremendous. So anything like that in terms of structured versus unstructured, I think is a benefit and a goal for Google.
Yeah, I think you're totally right. I think Google clearly has a preference for structured data, in that it makes, like you said, their job so much easier. And I'm glad you mentioned the overheads there, because a lot of us, you know, we use the analogy of like, oh, it's like having a pile of books and trying to find a particular book, or going to a shelf where it's sorted by, you know, author, and you can actually easily find it alphabetically or do a decimal system or whatever. Being able to access that data and finding it easily is one thing, but the overheads is such a key part of that, right? I think it's something a lot of us overlook in terms of the sheer amount of time and memory and work and just processing power that goes into the smallest change of Google, because they're dealing with trillions and trillions of sites, trillions of searches, you know, essentially the entire web at once. The slightest change can make a massive, if you reduce your like indexing like time by 1%, that's a massive difference. And usually you would think like 1% doesn't mean that much, right? But you're totally right that having structured data compared to unstructured data can make a huge difference in terms of the effort that Google is going to, and it would stand to reason that then they would kind of give preferential treatment to that structured data, right?
Yeah. Now, with preferential treatment, it could always be a thing of like, not everyone wants to do it. Not everyone is capable of providing structured data. So, once again, we would circle back potentially to the whole carrot and stick of rich results. Provide structured data feed, give it to us, push it up to us, and then we will give you this. So I could see, once again, they're just doing the same thing again, but for, the new emerging SGE and LLMs. I think that right now, like we said before, Jack, who knows where we're going to end up? But in the end, it's like making it easier going back to overhead. SGE, it's enormous overhead for them to produce it for every cert. So if they can balance it off with this in terms of reducing that overhead, I think that that's going to be something that I'm sure they're looking and experimenting now. The final format will be interesting to see.
Yeah, I think the final form is something that's so fascinating to me. We've seen so much variation, even in like the early preview, US best beta kind of stuff we've been seeing recently. We have not even got a look in at all here in the UK. And I know me and many other UK-based SEOs are very frustrated by you lucky people over in the US being able to experiment and test stuff with, and even things like perspectives as well, right? Being able to test all these cool SERP features and playing around with what Google is working on. And we're stuck over here kind of reading updates from people like Lily Ray and Barry and yourself as well, like thinking about how much of that stuff is changing. Where do you think the kind of most overlooked areas of schema are? Because I think a lot of people know about FAQ and how-to. They are, for want of a better phrase, like two of the bigger names. I think a fair few people know about organizational schema and stuff like that. But what are kind of like some of the underappreciated or overlooked kind of schemas that you think people should be using in 2023?
Well, I'll answer it two different ways. The thing is that it goes back to understanding what is on your site and how do you understand what is on your site, and you understand what is the offerings of the descriptions of the vocabulary schema.org, and then put those together. So, obviously you have to understand what schema.org is saying and what they're doing, but if we're talking specifically about examples, so we service industries, there is schema for service that you could do that most, when I see clients, most of them don't push that out there. They just have it as an article, or they have it as nothing. Or as we know, Jack, sometimes they're like, oh, well, I just put organization on everything because that's what you do. It's like, well, not really. You want to be like anything, you want to be as specific with you identifying what is on the page, specifically entities and their relationships. So if you have a service page, put service on it. Here's the thing. Connecting entities, relationships is one of those things which is so important. So you have a service page, but it is a service, but also offers some products as too. So why not make sure that you are putting the major schema class as service with the relationship within that schema class to property types that are promoting and talking about that service, which may or may not be on that page. A tool that I use daily is a schema app path tool. It's free, it's out there, you can Google it and find it, but that allows you to say like, oh, I want to connect product to service. I want to FAQ to podcast. How do I do that? And boom, It immediately tells you you've connected from this way to this way, and that's how you do it. So I think that underutilized is more an issue, Jack, of not understanding what schema.org can provide in terms of the definitions to represent things properly.
Yeah, I think you're totally right. I think it's a thing that most people are aware of but are not using properly, right? And not using to its fullest extent. Perfect example, they're talking about how products and services can relate to each other. And again, we're coming back around to this entity discussion. We're coming back to the relationships between things rather than just having an isolated, here is the services schema on the service page, here is product schema and stuff on the product pages. The way those two things interact with each other, I think you're very much saying there, like, is going to be key going forward to help Google to understand your business going forward and the kinds of things that you offer. If you're offering multiple different things that seem fairly separate, this is a way to connect it to say, yeah, this company does all these different things and this is how they interconnect for an overall package or an overall service, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So we're thinking about how to implement Schema now, and you mentioned being able to connect the dots and things like that. Is there anything in particular you use regularly to identify Schema, to implement Schema on your client sites and things like that?
Well, I mean, I think it goes back to the basics. Looking at the pages, what are the pages about? What I do too in building new sites, I use it in reverse, where I will look at when I'm building a site from like a schema.org vocabulary perspective.
Right, yeah.
What do I need to say about this organization or products and services it sells? How do I relate those? And then by doing that, so do I need pages to represent this, or do I need mentions within other pages to mention it? So in a way, you could reverse engineer a site thinking about schema.org first.
That's a really cool idea. I never heard it described that way before, but I like, as we're saying, like the structured data can work as building blocks for this thing, right? So it's almost creating that site structure and the information architecture from the top down almost rather than the bottom up.
Yeah, absolutely. Because sometimes you look at a site, and you've looked at them, Jack, where it just doesn't make sense. It's like, why do we have this here? Why do we have a whole page talking about this? And it's taking, it's taking away from the service page or the product or the about page. And, in a way, it's like the logic of the site doesn't work. So if the logic of the site doesn't work, it doesn't make sense to the user. It also doesn't make sense from a structured data, from an entity relationship standpoint.
Yeah, absolutely. So how would you go about that process? Obviously, imagine you haven't been working in Schema for over a decade, and imagine you're a newbie to Schema. Like, what would be the best approach to having a look at page and understanding what's going on there and how to, understand the relationships and the vocabulary you should be using?
Well, the biggest thing would be you look at the individual page and you try to discern what is the major schema class for the page? What is the main thing we are talking about here? And then once you get that, you relate that back to the schema.org vocabulary. And the nice thing about it, this is really an article. This is really a podcast. So for then, you go to schema.org, you find out about podcasts, you find out about article, and it lists every possible option and way to describe it. So then it's just like, oh, great. We talk about this on the page. We talk about this on the page. And then suddenly you see a property type that says, oh, we don't mention that on the page, but that's really important. We should, for a product, we should put manufacturer. We don't put manufacturer on it. It may be important to people to convert. So you're allowed to put additional information in schema.org in the structured data. You're also going to put it on the page, which helps you from a usability conversion standpoint. So it's a win-win, but always start with what is the major schema class and then go down from there.
Nice. And now let's kind of think about templating for schema as well, right? So I know there are plenty of examples out there. You can kind of borrow and copy and paste and kind of that kind of thing. But what is your kind of process for thinking about schema templates for pages and going through that with a client?
Well, I mean, I do a lot of templating for agencies and for e-commerce sites, so forth. The key there is, usually, I'm building out these templates for them. But as we know, you're building out, let's talk about like dev teams. So when you're building these out, I mean, you don't just, like anything with dev team, you don't just hand them the template, like, here you go, good luck. As we know, unless somehow that support ticket is the highest priority and it's going to force them to do it, they're going to pick and choose on what tickets they want to do because that's what they do. You know, so can we provide the most information to them to understand, like, here's the JSON-LD, here's the template we have to do. But point blank say, like, okay, JSON-LD, when we're doing structured data, is just an issue of mapping the content that is on the page. So helping them to relate to that, to not only tell them, like, okay, by the way, you know, this manufacturer is on here in this area. You know, the rating stars are here. But also tell them, like, okay, for an example, product page, I'll give people a template for the product page with an FAQ, a product page with a video, with a combination, so that the team can look at that and say, you know, since I'm going to deploy to 100, 200, a million pages, they have every option that is there on the major thing entities that are in their relationships, so they can work with that easily as opposed to trying to reinvent the wheel. Like, I kind of know how to do JSON-LD. I'll figure out. You know, every time we can handhold them in that way and support them is going to be something that they're going to want to look at this option, see that it's documented correctly, and move forward to actually do what we need them to do.
It's similar to what you were saying about Google as well, right? You're reducing the effort from the developer side of things. You're reducing overheads from developers' time and stuff like that. If you can make a developer's time a lot easier and make it much easier for them to implement the things you're asking, they're way more likely to do the thing that you're asking them to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And here's the other thing with that. When you're doing like programmatic deployment, you know, millions of pages, is it's not a perfect world. You're trying to template to get consistency across the board, but you have to work with what you have. So sometimes there may be something within, let's say their videos are all from Wistia, and Wistia is going to, they have their own schema markup that they create for video objects. So, you know, why reinvent the wheel? You know, leave what Wistia is putting for the video object on the page because it automatically deploys it. Then when you do the schema markup, do it and without that. Now, are you necessarily getting that entity related? No. But the reality is you work with what you have from a larger, you know, from larger scale sites that make it work for everybody, the dev team, the marketing team, and you just move forward. Because like you said, you only have so much time with the dev team. You do what you can do and you don't fight them.
Definitely don't pick fights with the dev team. You're always going to lose.
Yeah, absolutely.
So thinking about that in terms of priority and stuff like that, how would you go about communicating that with maybe somebody in the C-suite, you know, one of the bosses and or even one of the developers, of like, how important is schema to have it on the site for a client right now?
Well, I think, you know, it used to be that, you know, you have rich result opportunity, which rich result opportunity, there's a specific ROI you can track and do. Now, obviously, the ROI within the last, 60 days has been renaissance. So what you have to do is you have to go, you know, it goes back to more of understanding the importance that Google is putting on entity relationships and trying to, you know, have that discussion with the higher levels and let them know, like, this is where they're headed. You know, this is where they're now. Do we have a case study? Do we have an ROI we can see through analytics? We don't. So it becomes a much harder discussion to have. But I think that what happens is, and even within the last 2 years, bigger companies have come to me and like, listen, Dave, we got a team, digital marketing dev team. We've done schema. We've done FAQ stars. We got it all. We know how to do that. We feel that there's this growing need to get entity relationships locked down, to understand that we're making sure we're doing it. So I think it becomes from the awareness of them that it may not necessarily be people like us that are having those conversations and convincing them. It has to come from probably exterior sources such as Google that is going to be showing more importance to it. So is it easy, Jack, these days to do it? No. Was it made a lot harder within the last 60 days? Absolutely. But I think that the further that we can understand and the further the SGE moves forward, we can see that there's going to be, you know, a very specific priority that we're going to put on structured data that we could actually have, you know, a real conversation about to the higher levels.
Yeah, I think the future proofing side of it, I think, could be a really big positive seen by a lot of people. Like, you invest in this now and it is a thing that is going to benefit us in the future have that discussion, as we've been just saying, about how important entities are becoming over the last couple of years and will be going forward. I think that kind of convincing people who are investing their money into this process of saying this is a thing that is going to pay off in the future, and you know, this is forward thinking, right? Because I think there's so many sites, and I'm sure you've seen this far more than I have, but even I, just poking around on my client sites and doing competitor research and stuff, people do not use Schema as much as you think they would. Even if they've been working with an agency, even if they've previously worked with agencies and professionals in digital marketing and stuff, the fact that you would have a properly implemented structure for that kind of thing would make you, you know, a rare sort on the internet, even in 2023, I find.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. The amount of sites you see, they're like, they're doing that? Why? Or goals, or as we know, sometimes there's websites that, bigger ones that are like, there's almost different groups that completely control different areas of the website. And one side will have Schema markup, the other one will have nothing. And you're just like, how does this happen? So yeah, I totally agree with that.
I had a similar thing with a client a little while ago. There was basically each individual international site had its own team. So it was a multiple layer thing of like, okay, here's the US team, here's the German team. Each language basically had its own team. And some of them would be very receptive to implementing new stuff. And some of them were like, oh no, that's way further down the line. So the German speaking sites, so like the Austrian site and the German site and things, would be all sorted with the, you know, the most up to date things we've recommended. And then the US site, because it's a massive team that has a much longer queue of tickets to get through, is like, oh, that might happen in 6 months, maybe, I don't know.
6 months means 12 months. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. 6 months being very optimistic. Yeah. So thinking of like tools and stuff like that, what are the kind of things that you're go to, apart from looking on the page itself, to check Schema, to review and make sure it's all working correctly and things like that?
Sure. Well, I mean, the standards are always going to be the Schema Markup Validator from schema.org. To understand, you know, is the syntax correct? Is everything nested properly? You know, moving, of course, to the rich results test, which is basically talking about, you know, rich result eligibility. Those are the core. The nice thing about the Schema Markup Validator is that most people don't use it for. It's like, it's an editor. You can change your code. Many times I brought stuff in and I need to tweak something or add something. Like, I just put it in there. I put it in there, I revalidate, it's perfect, and then it's done. I don't have to bring it back into my other tools. You know, that's a great thing. When we talk about like seeing like how everything looks, the relationships, two great tools, classyschema.org, wonderful set of tools to visualize the schema markup and entity relationships. Another one that I just love is I love the name too, Jason Crack. So Jason Crack is another visualization tool, and it's a great way because, you know, there's so much going on with schema markup when you look at it. To get, and some people are visual learners, so to see that, you know, some people, it starts to click with them. They can see and understand better than just looking at the schema markup validator. Those are some tools I use, you know, basically daily in order to get stuff done. I mean, I use Schemap is another great tool. It's an industrial strength tool set. I mean, obviously, there's all these other, not necessarily tools, but products that enable schema markup, you know, the Yoast, RankMath, and so forth. And there's generators for snippets and stuff. So there's a lot of great tools out there. But like I said, go with the core, Schema Markup Validator, rich results testing tool. You need some visualization, go with the other ones I said. And I think that, you know, like I said, schema.org is your friend, you know. It's that boring book that you don't want to read, but if you read it, you're like, okay, I got something out of it.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's schema.org does look like it was made in like 1998, so I think it does scare some people off sometimes. I know when I first opened it like 3 or 4 years ago, I was like, okay, where do I even start here? Like, trying to even navigate the thing was pretty intimidating. But like you said, I think once you get the hang of it, once you're able to start searching around, and the fact that it breaks everything down into the individual parts of, like you said, we take podcast schema and you can see episode and you can see listen time and you can see all the different elements within that, all the different class types that then layer them out and things like that, it makes such a huge difference. And when it comes to, again, talking to people who are maybe the executives or the bosses, the C-suite people, those visualization tools, I think, can be really, really powerful. It's something we've talked about with Also Asked here at Canda when we're thinking about the power to visualize how these things relate to each other, rather than having to go and look at the PAA data on Google and having to click through multiple SERPs. You can have a graph that literally connects the dots and shows everything out. And yeah, something like Classy Schema does a brilliant job of like laying out and structuring out and building that kind of relationship graph, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I love it.
I always find those kind of maps fascinating because, again, there might be stuff you're not even thinking of that would be, that would make so much sense to relate to each other. And I find a lot of the times with my clients, we'll have an element where we're not sure. And we use the example of like the products and services elements, like, oh, maybe they should be related to each other because you can use the product and the services, but the client has never ever thought about they're two separate halves of the business. We sell the things and then we also use the things for you on your behalf. But actually having them both related to each other is a really powerful way of telling the customers that, hey, we are experts in this topic, right?
Absolutely. One quick example is just like an OEM parts provider. OEM parts provider is providing parts that are made by, you know, not specifically the industry. For instance, you know, auto parts. You know, you can go to OEM vendor and get every part for Honda you want. But the nice thing about it is, you know, when you do that and you do a site well, you're talking about the OEM part, you're relating it and talking about that it actually is a part for a Honda CR-V 2018. And you may be writing some articles and content about, oh, you know, what are the best brake pads for a Honda CR-V 2018? Right there, from a structured data standpoint and looking like visually, you can see how you can relate articles that were about the Honda, you know, related all the way back to the OEM part that you're talking about. You know, so once again, these visual tools really help you to help let people understand the story you're trying to tell. And sometimes the story is very complex, such as like an OEM part vendor.
Yeah, I think that's something we talk about a lot. It was something that I kind of tried to bring up with clients, that marketing is always storytelling at the end of the day. And I know we're getting very technical. We're talking about a lot of schema stuff, but at the end of the day, you're getting products and services to humans and helping people to get them, making it as easy as possible for people to buy your product or your services, right? And to help people to understand how things relate to each other and how your products, your services, your whatever it is, your auto parts, your OEM parts, whatever it is, how they all relate to each other is such a powerful tool that builds that story and builds that the whole kind of tale of your company and of your business. And I think it's something that a lot of us, I'm totally guilty of this myself, thinking of kind of like the storytelling kind of being more about the content and all about the on-page stuff and not even thinking about how the technical side of things and how things like schema can tie into that process as well.
Absolutely. No, I mean, I think that for a lot of people, when they're working with schema markup, it can be overwhelming.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
And I think that, you know, trying to jump into it as beginner is very hard to do. And I think that, you know, for some people, using what like a Yoast or RankMath gives you is a great starting point for small to medium-sized businesses, because it gives you what you need right now. Now, can you go the nth degree and looking for something more? Yes. Do you have to do it on the day you launch a site? No, you can wait 6 months or a year, because as we know, there's so many priorities in the business. What you're doing from the technical or the storytelling standpoint is sometimes, you know, it's okay to get a base level of structured data down and then worry, you know, and then reprioritize that at a later date along with everything else. And I think that some people think that from day one, they have to have everything, the I's dotted and T's crossed, and it's not. You know, you do the best you can, you move on to other things and you revisit at a later time. And, you know, maybe you end up revisiting it and you use a different tool set. Maybe you go, you know, and maybe you just customize it completely. So, you know, one thing is that just don't think that you have to do everything in one day with schema markup. Hey, Jeff, which is the same thing we can say about so many things in our business, but definitely just I wanted to let people know that.
Yeah, I think that's so true, where you want to get everything, like a site launcher or a migration is a perfect example, right? Where you want to make sure everything is 100% ready to go. And sometimes that's just not realistic. Sometimes it's a bit too overwhelming. And having some structured data is better than none. Like having your basics, having your products and your services and your organization in there, having the basics for you and your business is going to be better, and build that foundation and set you off on a good foot for the future when you then do want to build upon that and expand out and do more for the site. But I think you're totally right. I'm totally guilty of that and trying to do the kind of perfectionist kind of thing, right? Of I want to get everything done day one, make sure it launches as it's the perfect website that launches day one. And that is so unrealistic in this day and age.
Yeah, I am totally with you on that, without a doubt.
Awesome. Well, Dave, if people do want to follow your advice about schema and all that kind of stuff, where can they find you on social media and where can they find your website as well?
Sure. On social media, you can find me on Twitter. It's Dave Ojeda. You can find me LinkedIn as well. My website is DaveOjeda.com. I'm happy to talk to anyone about this all day long. This at Dungeons & Dragons, I'm ready for
it. You're my kind of guy, Dave. We can talk about schema. We talk about Dungeons & Dragons. That's what I like to hear. And I'm sure our conversations will continue. I need to learn all about Kelvin Brightwind as much as I can, because I am still so fascinated by that build.
Let's go. Let's do it.
That's a whole... We'll start our own Dungeons & Dragons podcast. How about that?
For sure.
Me, you, Jamie Indigo, Jamar, all those guys, like Ian Lurie.
That'll be a fun one, without a doubt. And thanks, Jack, for your time. This was great.
Thank you for coming on, man. It's an absolute pleasure to finally talk to you. I know, like I said, we've been talking a lot on Twitter, and it's nice to finally actually sit down and have a conversation with you.
Well, I will be listening to you, as always, on my treadmill, and I enjoy this podcast immensely.
Thank you, man. Thank you, man. I appreciate it. And that wraps us up for this week. Thank you so much for joining me, Dave Ojeda. It was a really interesting conversation all about schema, structured data, and markup and all that kind of stuff. I hope you enjoyed it and learned a few things as well, listeners. And if you want to talk D&D, you want to learn about Kelvin Brightwind, go and talk to Dave Ojeda on LinkedIn or Twitter, because Dave and I could have done an entire nerdy podcast about Dungeons & Dragons. I'll tell you that much for free. Of course, I'll be back next week with another fantastic guest. Mark and I will also be back with another episode of Systrix with Kanda, our monthly news recap show as well. So please do stay tuned for that later in October. Thank you so much for listening and have a lovely week.